show, everybody, on Wednesday morning. That means it's a grade the trade day on Fantasy Baseball Today. Scott traded Cody Bellinger. We'll give it a grade, and we'll, of course, grade your trades, because that's what you're here for, not Scott's trades. Adam Azer, Scott White, and Chris Towers today, and reminding you that sports trades are scary. One person can be replaced by another, exchanged for money, or given away for a hypothetical future person, and once they leave your team, you can't like them anymore, even if you have their jersey, which you can't wear anymore, except at B-dubs. They won't judge, but others might. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Welcome to the trade show, guys. Good morning.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
What's going on?
You know, I already told you I'm fired up today, so.
It's a good day.
It is a good day.
The Knicks are getting rid of Phil.
Yeah, whatever.
After, you know, 3 weeks after picking up their mutual option for two more years, so. Phil Jackson gets $24 million out of the deal. It's pretty nice.
Oh, my God.
Can't knock that hustle.
My sports teams are terrible, but at least fantasy is doing okay.
Hey, the only team I care about is the Marlins, so I don't want to hear anything.
It was an interesting night for pitching last night.
It was a very interesting night for pitching last night.
Yeah, a lot of big performances from pitchers who either we were on the fence about, or maybe we were just a little over the fence on them. Lots to talk about today.
All right, hit
me
with it.
Can I give you my favorite pitching stat from last night?
Yeah.
All right, so you know how Ivan Nova is a good pitcher? He has a 3.06 ERA. He's been very good since getting to Pittsburgh.
Sure. Yeah.
He doesn't have a single start with more than 10 swinging strikes this year. Luis Severino had 10 in the first two innings yesterday.
Wow.
And he couldn't even get the win.
That Severino stat is fiery.
Yeah, he pitched great.
He's so good.
The White Sox are a really good matchup right now. The last two starts for Severino weren't so great, but overall, we certainly believe in him.
Man, you are down on the Yankees. You're diminishing your own star's accomplishment.
Well, I think, you know, with Severino, he's been a touch up and down lately.
Who isn't a touch up and down?
I agree.
Starting pitcher.
Everybody's on board with Severino.
Okay.
I just hate the Yankees. But, which other pitchers? Like, Scott White was tweeting about Sean Newcomb. Sean Newcomb's on the brain for Scott White.
Yeah. Do you want to say he was facing the Padres and they're a good matchup always?
He was facing the Padres.
Yeah, no, that's true. He was facing the Padres.
But he didn't face the Padres. Previously, he's been very good.
Who did he face in his last start? Who did Sean Newcomb face in his last start? The Giants.
Giants
are terrible.
Playoff aspirations.
They are the worst team in baseball.
You're the worst team in
baseball.
Actually,
I think Sean Newcomb's really interesting. So he's 68% owned. He threw six scoreless innings with one walk and eight strikeouts. His previous start was six innings, one-run ball with three strikeouts against the Giants. Only 68% owned, but listen to this quote from Andy Green, San Diego's manager. Quote, "That was the largest strike zone I have seen against our guys behind home plate. Newcomb threw the ball very well, but Tyler Flowers is the player of the game in my mind. He is snatching balls above the zone, below the zone, and bringing them back in and getting a strike on all of them."
He is considered one of the best pitch framers, Tyler Flowers, which is why I was not so interested in the Braves pursuing Matt Wieters this offseason. But, you know, this is four good starts for Sean Newcomb now. This was the best of the four, and it was with the best matchup of the four. But, I mean, any pitcher beginning his career with four good starts and with a good number of swings and misses and without the one real issue he had in the minors, which was control issues. We haven't seen those pop up. He had four walks in the start against the Marlins, I guess. But overall, it hasn't been nearly the concern we suspected it might be. And I think he should be must own. There's been some question this week about whether or not he'll make a second start. I have not heard anything about Bartolo Colon starting tonight.
He is.
Where did you see that?
In the Associated Press recap, they said Bartolo Colon is starting today.
Okay, well.
And, you know, looking at Baseball Savant's strike zone, he probably got four pretty generous called strikes. Actually, I don't know if they were even called strikes. They could have been swinging strikes. There were four pitches way outside of the zone. But for the most part, it doesn't look like he had that generous of a strike zone.
Well, I guess if he's going to have some control issues, Sean Newcomb, it's nice to have the catcher that he has, which is also why I brought up the quote.
Yeah.
But, it says in the story that Bartolo Colon is expected to come off the DL and start.
Yeah, there's
today.
A story on MLB.com about him getting one last chance today.
Scott, I will give you Sean Newcomb and Tom Murphy for Jonathan Lucroy in a two-catcher roto league.
Sean Newcomb and Tom Murphy?
Yeah.
That's basically Sean Newcomb for Lucroy straight up.
Yeah.
Murphy's not playing very much, but we all think he could be very good someday.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that day will be soon enough for me to give up a superior catcher.
I do have some concerns about Sean Newcomb and his long-term viability right now, just because he's mostly been a two-pitch pitcher. He's only thrown 8 changeups in 4 starts. The slider's not really been a big part of his arsenal either. He's mostly been four-seam fastball and curveball. And for lefties, that can be a concern because you do need that pitch that can neutralize the platoon split. So we'll see how that goes once the league starts to catch up to him. That's a potential red flag, but he should be 100% owned at this point.
I'm so bummed Colon is starting tonight. You don't know how many people on Twitter I assured that Newcomb was making 2 starts this week.
Nah.
Because every time I looked up Bartolo Colon Wednesday on Google, I got references to him, his start that was supposed to happen last Wednesday, but then he gets suffered another injury, and it was like, who knows when he's going to start again?
You know what,
so I don't know how all these probable pitcher tools out there knew he was starting Wednesday, but nobody was reporting it.
Yeah, but he...
Now all of a sudden he is.
Newcomb, look, you got a really good start from him. You're not even going to complain about the one start week, so...
Yeah.
You can be happy about that. I guess I just still can't fully get over the concerns about the control because it was so pronounced in the minor leagues. And like Brandon Finnegan, Finnegan only had 1 great start to start the season. It was against the Phillies, 7 scoreless, 1 hit, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. That was his first start. And then his control went awry and then he went on the DL. But
yes,
Newcomb,
yes, nobody's giving Sean Newcomb Rookie of the Year or Cy Young, but he's 66% owned or something like that. Like, we don't need to be that critical with the guy who's so widely available.
Oh, yeah.
Just pick him up, see where it goes, because it seems like it's heading a good direction.
You have to have a pitcher you're okay dropping.
Yeah, look, Newcomb I would definitely own, but I'm going to try to trade him to Scott. So we have a Reddit AMA. We have a Reddit AMA today. Reddit.com/r/fantasybaseball, 2 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions that we don't get to on the show, feel free to hop on to Reddit, and we'll try to answer your questions. The only thing you have to do for us is spread the word about our podcast. Tell your friends. Help us grow. And obviously, we've grown a lot over the 7 or 8 years that we've done this, but we want to be number one. I think we're already number one in fantasy baseball. We want to be number one overall. All right? Fantasy
in the world.
Fantasy football
we're
today.
Coming for you, S-Town.
That would be good for baseball, I think, if we were number one, the number one podcast in the world, a fantasy baseball podcast.
Serial, S-Town.
We might
all of them down.
Improve the whole sport's popularity.
I don't know how I feel about S-Town. S-Town was good, but really just had no point. It went like 10 different directions.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it.
Oh, okay. Then we'll get into
it. I just know it's a thing.
Scott traded Cody Bellinger. Scott, what'd you give up for Cody Bellinger? Or what'd you get for Cody Bellinger?
I gave up Cody Bellinger and Addison Russell because I was taking the guy's shortstop away. I was taking Francisco Lindor away.
Yeah.
In a shallow league. So, you know, if I didn't trade Russell, I would have dropped Russell. It's basically Cody Bellinger straight up for Lindor.
Chris, grade the trade.
You probably have to do that. I think it's like a B-.
Okay. All right, Scott.
I don't love it.
Good job. I like it. I think B is fair. He's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's a big upgrade at shortstop.
I don't expect to make unfair trades.
Oh, I do.
It's worth noting, I probably tried to, with 5 different owners, to get a pitcher, a high-end starting pitcher back for Bellinger, and they just weren't having it. People were holding so tight to their pitchers.
Yeah.
I considered offering him straight up to Heath for Cueto, but I figured Heath would reject it just on principle. So I went for a guy who showed some interest, but didn't want to give up necessarily a great pitcher and saw he had Lindor. That would fill a need for me because Addison Russell, in a shallow league, I'm just not sure he's going to help me that much.
Have
so I was
you
happy
seen...
to do it.
Lindor's stats over the last calendar year.
Over the last calendar year?
365 days, 157 games.
I have not.
He's kind of a jag.
What are you talking about? He hasn't even been a jag this year.
I'm just pointing out 271 batting average, 90 runs, 19 homers, 75 RBI, 9 steals.
Ooh,
that's good.
Yeah, it's a lot more than jag at shortstop.
It's good.
Is it?
But it's not elite.
Only 9 steals? That's surprising.
Look, you gave it a B minus.
What?
I'm just pointing. Look, don't shoot the messenger.
I'm not shooting the messenger. You cannot make me feel bad about this trade, no matter how hard you try.
You know, it's...
Do you think Cody Bellinger's going to regress?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, look, here's the thing. This was a points league that Scott pulled this trade off in. Counts walks, strikeouts, doubles. And Lindor is the number 6 shortstop in points, number 11 in roto. He's got 21 doubles. That's been a big strength for him this year.
Mm-hmm.
And good plate discipline as well. But only 3 steals all year for Francisco Lindor. That's weird. Now, remember, a lot fewer singles this year because of all the doubles. But 3
steals.
And
the home runs.
All right, let's move on. Here's a Grade the Trade teaser. I want to read a lot of Grade the Trades later in the show. But here's a teaser. And I'm going to tell you after this what's coming up on today's show. Spike Harris. Give Travis Shaw, get Eric Thames. Grade the Trade. Give Travis Shaw, get Eric Thames. Now, Shaw, of course, is third base and first base eligible, but if you just look at first base, Shaw's a top 8 first baseman. Thames is 12th in points, 14th in roto. So, give it a grade. You give up Shaw, you get Thames.
I give it a B minus.
Yeah, I was thinking like a C plus, which is basically a B minus.
Okay, again, not disagreeing here. I bring stuff up, doesn't mean I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why, at this point, halfway through the season, why is Shaw not better than Eric Thames in your rankings?
Well, we both probably need to move Shaw above Thames in our rankings if we're thinking this is a good trade for the guy getting Shaw.
No, the guy's getting Thames.
I was answering for getting Thames. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a C minus.
I'd rather have Thames than Shaw. I think it's the better overall package, certainly better plate discipline, and I think there's more raw power there. I think maybe Shaw just recently passed Thames and is outscoring him now in points leagues, but that's, you know, with Thames slumping to the point that he's batting like 245 now, that's going to correct itself.
I think Shaw has some regression coming, especially with the power numbers. One thing that we liked, and a big part of why Heath liked him as a sleeper / breakout coming into the season, was he hit a ton of fly balls. That's a very good thing when you're at Miller Park. His fly ball rate's down to 35% from 45% last season. Now, the home run rate has still held strong, but I don't know how long he can sustain a 22% home run to fly ball ratio. And, you know, if he had 12 home runs right now, we'd probably look at Travis Shaw a lot differently.
All right, so one of you, so Chris, you're going to take Shaw over Thames, though, and Scott's going to take Thames over Shaw.
I'm probably going to move Shaw just a little bit ahead.
All right. Would you take either of them over Jake Lamb?
I think I'd still rather have Lamb.
Scott?
Yeah, maybe Thames in a points league, but that's a close call, and certainly I'd rather have Lamb in categories.
Tuesday's standouts. All right, I'm just going to say Curtis Granderson. He's got the second highest OBP in baseball in the month of June. It's 451. He has 4 home runs in his last 6 games. He is on fire, and Curtis Granderson is 28% owned. Anybody want to pick him up?
I think he has like a 900 OPS since May 1st or something.
Since May 1st, wow.
I think, let me check that. He had a 391 OPS on May 1st.
Boy, that's
terrible.
He's
up to 791 for the season, so he's probably...
All right, well, are you interested, Chris?
He's got 1,000 OPS since May 1st.
Well, are you picking him up? Answer the question.
Nah.
You and your... Oh, so you offer this, like, really optimistic-sounding fact,
well,
and then you're like...
He's almost certainly going to get traded soon, right? Within the next month? There's no guarantee. Well, they're not going to trade you on a Cespedes.
I mean, if they get... So, like, I don't know how much value he holds, really.
I would assume they're going to trade Jay Bruce. I would assume they're going to trade Curtis Granderson.
Okay.
Cespedes and Conforto are going to be there for the long run. And there's no guarantee Granderson gets moved into an everyday role, but in a 5 outfielder league, Granderson should be owned at this point, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'd rather have Trey Mancini than him. I'd rather have Tommy Pham than him.
I'd rather have Tommy Pham. I'm not sure about Trey Mancini.
I'd rather have... Yeah, I think he might still be just outside of it. Just, you know, outfield being so deep.
Do you want to know who a top 10 outfielder over the last 28 days is that is owned in fewer leagues, I believe, than Curtis Granderson? Granderson's, they're about the same, about 28-30% owned.
I would very much like to know.
Michael Taylor, who stole two bases yesterday. We got actually a good email about Michael Taylor. I'm trying to find out who sent it. But in the meantime, Michael Taylor, do you guys think he is under-owned? He stole two more bases yesterday. He's 31% owned, number 10 in points, number 8 in roto over the last 28 days with a .304 batting average, 7 homers, 6 steals, 3 walks, 27 strikeouts. What do you think, Taylor or Granderson?
Taylor, because stolen bases are harder to come by.
Yeah, in categories league, maybe Granderson at points, but, you know, points are usually smaller lineups and you wouldn't have to reach that far. I don't have a lot of confidence in Taylor sustaining this anywhere close to this, really. BABIP's like 380.
376, yeah.
Not a particularly high line drive rate or anything like that. So he's still a little too wild to sustain a fantasy relevant pace, I think.
And the Nationals, I think,
worth coming back soon, I think.
Nationals stole 7 bases off of Jake Arrieta yesterday, I think.
Yes, they did.
Miguel Montero had some pretty fiery quotes after the game, basically blaming Jake Arrieta for all of the stolen bases.
Are you talking about quote of the day number 2, which is, quote, "It really sucked because the stolen bases go on me, but when you really look at it, the pitcher doesn't give me any time. So, yeah, Mickey can't throw anyone out, but my pitchers don't hold anyone on."
Wow. Team player.
Oh, wow, he hasn't had a single caught stealing yet?
31 for 31.
That's amazing. Wow.
He's worried about his livelihood.
But it is the pitcher's fault too. Except
I think
Montero doesn't catch John Lester, so that's not an excuse.
John Lester picked someone off like 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
you know,
did you guys see that? I did.
I saw somebody tweet out a stat based on this quote. It was a guy named by the name of Al
Melchior.
Melchior.
Yeah, I was right.
So there were 7 stolen bases off Arrieta and Montero yesterday. Over his previous 15 starts, Arrieta had 8 stolen bases off him. So 7 yesterday versus 8 in the previous 15.
And part of that's Michael Taylor and Trey Turner are really fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Turner stole 4 bases. Taylor stole 2. And they talked about it after the game. They were like, he's slow to the plate. We went on him. And that brings us to Worryometer Wednesday, which is headlined by Jake Arrieta. But let me give you some of the segments that we have coming up. We have Worryometer Wednesday. We'll talk about the bullpen with Colome, Cody Allen, Senwan Oh struggling yesterday. We have 2 top 5 picks who have much better plate discipline this year and worse results. We'll give you the injuries, news, and notes. I do want to talk about what has worked and what hasn't worked so far this year in terms of strategy, in terms of draft. A lot of fringy starting pitchers like Alex Cobb, Mike Fiers, Tyson Ross, Jeff Hoffman. Interesting, relevant players. We'll talk about them. Jock Peterson's been crushing it since coming off the DL. And I have a segment in here called Fun with Fangraphs. Chris, are you excited for Fun with Fangraphs?
I'm always excited.
Well,
if
you want to get...
More like Fun Graphs.
Fun Graphs. If you want to get to Fun with Fangraphs, we got to pick up the pace. Let's do it. Worryometer Wednesday. I'm just going to give you 4 pitchers. And instead of going each one by one, you tell me if you are worried long-term about any of these 4 pitchers. Some were good, some were bad yesterday. Jake Arrieta, 5 swinging strikes yesterday, terrible start, 4.67 ERA, 1.36 whip, and only 2 starts of more than 6 innings this year. Jake Arrieta. Justin Verlander struggled in the first inning, had some terrible luck, and then he shut down the Royals over the next 6 innings and ended up with a pretty good start. That's Verlander. Jose Quintana, 4 walks but did not give up a run, only 2 hits against the Yankees yesterday, and he's been good lately. And James Paxton, I guess a step in the right direction, but a little disappointing. 3 runs, 3 walks, and 7 innings against the Phillies. Arrieta, Verlander, Quintana, Paxton. Here on Worryometer Wednesday, who are you worried about?
I mean, I guess you have to be most worried about Jake Arrieta.
Definitely.
I mean, obviously he was the worst yesterday, but it's
been the worst all season.
Yeah, and we keep thinking, okay, the turnaround's going to happen, and it seems like he's gotten worse. Even though last start was good in terms of run prevention, the one before this one, he had like three swings. He had like three strikeouts in it, and it was one of his worst velocity starts of the season. So the velocity's been down all year, but I've been giving him a pass for it because the strikeout rate was so good. It seems like the last couple starts, that's kind of gone away too.
And the ground ball rate hasn't come back.
Yeah, it's worrisome.
I've been very much on the not worried about Jake Arrieta side of things, and at some point I have to take the evidence in front of me, which is that he's been bad for about a year now. And there aren't that many promising signs. You know, his peripherals suggest that he's a high threes, low fours guy, 417 FIP, 391 XFIP, 401 Sierra. I'm going to be moving him outside of my top 10.
That's really not a huge deal.
Yeah, I might be moving him outside of my top 20 or 25 at this point.
Yeah, like, are you going Carrasco or Arrieta?
Carrasco
at this point, although he's had his own ups and downs.
Well, how many of the other guys on the worryometer list, Verlander, Quintana, Paxton, would you rank ahead of Arrieta?
Definitely Verlander and Paxton.
Yeah, I would still have Arrieta ahead of Quintana just because Quintana doesn't have the upside Arrieta does. But
yeah, for now, I think I'll stick with that. I mean,
but Quintana's...
We saw Justin Verlander turn on a dime last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've made the mistake enough over the years of burying a really good player prematurely. So I don't want to completely bury Arrieta, but I am as discouraged as I've ever been.
And it's a very good sign for both Verlander and Quintana that they're starting to turn it around, because they were two of the guys who were struggling early on. Like Arrieta, when he was struggling, or Arrieta, as he is struggling, we've been like, well, control's still not great, ground ball rate's way down. You have an explanation for it. Verlander and Quintana, you didn't really have an explanation for why they weren't getting good results. And so it's good to see that keeping the faith appears to be paying off.
Okay. And with Verlander, I mean, you look at his last start. His last start was 3 runs in 5 2/3, but I think he had a no-hitter going into the sixth. He had 11 strikeouts, and then I believe his bullpen let him down. So I think it's two encouraging starts in a row, at least for Verlander. And all right, we'll move on from Worryometer Wednesday. Let's go to the bullpen and see if you're worried about any of these guys. You tell me, are you worried about any of them, first of all, losing their job as closer? Alex Colome, Cody Allen, Senwano.
Allen, I guess, might be the most concerning. Like, this wasn't really a disastrous start appearance. He just allowed a home run. But him introducing the idea of them mixing in Andrew Miller in the ninth inning, Miller's clearly the more effective reliever, and I could see that happening more, particularly if there's another, if Allen's responsible for another loss very shortly after this appearance. The thing about Colome and O is there's not really anyone who could take their place. Colome, first of all, I don't think deserves to have his job lost.
Yeah.
But O's been pretty unreliable all year, just not nearly as dominant as he was a year ago. But Trevor Rosenthal hasn't been very good, and he has durability concerns anyway. There's just nobody else for the Cardinals to turn to. Mike Matheny basically said the same thing.
And, you know, it's worth acknowledging that a year ago, it was Sengwon Oh who took Trevor Rosenthal's job because Trevor Rosenthal was so underwhelming.
Yeah.
And I think we've also seen... I think Trevor Rosenthal's name has been mentioned in some trade rumors as well. So, you know, that's a potential outcome as well.
Yeah, Rosenthal has been pitching poorly lately, and this was his chance to get that job back, because over his last appearances, O has given up 12 hits, 7 runs, and 3 homers. Colome is struggling lately. He's given up 7 runs in his last 3 appearances. His ERA has gone up from 195 to 357, so he was having a really great year. But less than a strikeout per inning, and one fewer walk this year than last year in 21 and a third fewer innings for Colome. So he's not the dominant. Like, he was having a really good year. He's ERA under 2, getting a lot of saves. They were a surprisingly solid team. But walk-to-strikeout ratio, anyway, not nearly as good as it was last year for Colome.
It's true.
Yeah.
Don't buy relievers after 1 year,
I guess.
Very risky.
I mean, he's still a top 15 reliever, right?
Well, but both him and Sengwon Oh, basically have one good year as a reliever and have one year where they've been not nearly as good.
New segment, better plate discipline, worse results. And the two players I want to talk about are top five picks, Mookie Betts and Chris Bryant. Now, both of them are better in points leagues because they have better plate discipline. But let's look at Betts. Betts was the number one, I believe the number one hitter in fantasy last year. Mm-hmm. This year, he is the number four outfielder in points leagues, which still just kind of rubs me the wrong way. I just don't think he's been that good, but the points are the points. The number 13 outfielder in roto slash categories leagues. Betts is batting .269, 12 homers, 12 steals, 33 walks, 28 strikeouts, and 25 doubles, which helps in points. Second most doubles in baseball behind Arenado. So that's Betts. Chris Bryant is the number four third baseman in points leagues, number seven in roto, with a .259 batting average, 16 home runs, 6 steals, 53 walks, 70 strikeouts. Chris Bryant, his batting average is 33 points lower than it was last year, yet his on-base percentage is even better. K rate's about the same. Walk rate is way up. The BABIP is down. The BABIP is down for both of them. Now, here's the difference that I saw anyway. Tell me, as I'm sure you're looking at Fangraphs now. Fun with Fangraphs. Mookie Betts appears to be just like so unlucky. Everything seems to be the same, except his hard contact rate is actually up. But the ground ball ratio, all that stuff, it almost looks exactly the same, except the BABIP is way down. So to me, it looks like Betts is unlucky. Bryant's hard contact rate, 40% last year, 29% this year. So what do you make of better plate discipline, worse results for Mookie Betts and Chris Bryant?
The one thing I'm looking at with Mookie Betts, and he's become much more pull-heavy this season.
Pull-heavy? Yeah, you know, he's loves to swim, that guy.
And, you know, typically you're lighter in water because it's more buoyant.
But you know what? He hasn't been waiting the 30 minutes after he's been eating.
And that's the problem. Getting cramps.
There it is. Easy fix.
And Fangraphs, fun with Fangraphs, they have a splits tool where you can look at how a hitter is doing against the shift. And Mookie Betts is hitting .303 against the shift compared to .423 last season. He's being shifted about as often, so it's not like, you know, that's really a big concern. But that's one potential explanation. He's just, maybe he was a little lucky against the shift last year. Maybe he's been a little unlucky this season.
All right, let me start over here. Betts and Bryant, let's face it. It's not like they've been bad, right?
Yeah.
They've been fine. But they haven't been MVP caliber. Do you still see them as MVP caliber, Betts and Bryant?
Yes. Yes, and I think both are being hurt by the lineups around them as much as anything else. Mm-hmm.
They are both top five outfielders for me, and I've never considered moving them out. And even with these numbers you pointed out, I'm not considering moving them out.
But Chris Bryant's on pace for less than 70 RBI.
Wow.
And both he and Betts scored 120 plus runs and drove in 100 last year. And they're both on pace for about 95 runs. And Bryant's on pace for fewer than 70 RBI, which is crazy.
That is.
I am going to, I mean, part of that is Bryant usually bats second, right?
Lead off or second. But that's the lineup around them is not nearly as, because he was batting second most of last season, too.
Yeah, he was. I'm
going to predict that his hard contact rate goes up going forward, and also that he does finish with more than 70 RBI.
Okay.
Like, it's just, like, I see it as, oh man, he's gotten really burned on RBI before, and look how productive he still is.
He's going to have like a 25 RBI month at some point.
All right, hope so. Because I wanted Chris Bryant to be the best hitter in baseball this year, so I was kind of hoping for. And, all right, maybe we'll get in the second half. Let's do some news and notes. And Starlin Castro is on the DL. He's hoping he can come back in 10 days. And Tyler Wade did not start yesterday. They came off the bench. Yasiel Puig gave the double middle finger last month or whenever that was, a few weeks ago, and his suspension has been rescinded. But he does have a sore knee and a sore hamstring, and he sat yesterday, Yasiel Puig. Arizona shortstop Nick Ahmed has a small fracture in his hand. There's no rhyme or reason to the order of these news and notes, as you're going to see. They are just random. I forgot to order them. Hanley Ramirez sat again with a knee issue. He was hit by a pitch on the knee on Sunday. John Gray is going to start at Arizona on Friday. Two questions about John Gray. He's 82% owned. One, is he underowned?
Yes.
Two, will you start him at Arizona?
No.
No.
Okay. That's John Gray, 82% owned. Tyler Anderson could miss about a month after knee surgery. Jonathan Villar and Ryan Braun returned for the Brewers. Villar sat. Hernan Perez sat. So you had Domingo Santana. You had Keon Broxton. You had Braun in the outfield. You had Sogard and Arcia in the middle infield and Sean Thames. So, yeah, VR, I can see people dropping him soon. Let's see how that plays out. Corey Seager was available to pinch hit yesterday. Bud Black said he would be surprised if David Dahl played this season, which is good, but it also seems to indicate that David Dahl is nowhere near returning.
He would be surprised if he did play or didn't play.
Sorry, if he didn't play.
Okay, yeah.
But still.
How the hell did this happen? Like, what is going? This was like a, oh, well, maybe he'll miss a couple of weeks in spring. Maybe he'll miss the first week of the season. It's basically July. I know there's 3 days left in the month, but it's basically July.
Yeah.
Has he even started swinging a bat?
Wait, I need to talk about something. Thank you for reminding me. Scott, first of all, you just ranked your top 30 DL stashes. Is David Dahl on there?
No, but he didn't miss by much.
Okay. 30's a lot, though. Two, programming update. Next week is July 4th. I was really in a sour mood until just now when I just reminded myself and everybody, we have Monday and Tuesday off next week. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Doing cartwheels.
I got to be like Santa Claus yesterday, telling everybody in our department that we're off Monday and Tuesday next week.
I knew we were off Tuesday. I didn't know we were off Monday. So yeah. What we're going to do, I think, is a mailbag on Friday and air that on Monday. And we will not have a show on Tuesday. I do apologize. But enjoy the fireworks. Quick thing there. So just programming update. Expect a mailbag on Monday. Back to the news and notes. DJ LeMahieu left with a groin cramp. Colorado called up Mike Tauchman? Tauchman? Tauchman?
I would guess Tauchman.
Does anybody care?
No. No. Okay.
I don't think so.
I shouldn't have even pronounced his name. Some lineup notes. How about this from your outfield for the and DH for the Rangers yesterday? Delino DeShields, Shin-Soo Chu, Nomar Mazara, and Mike Napoli. They all went either 0-for-3 or 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, and DeShields was caught stealing, so good for them. Texas catcher Robinson Chirinos hit his 11th home run, which is just not good for Jonathan Lucroy because Chirinos is hitting home runs.
Still not taking that trade.
I'm just saying. They're probably going to cut Lucroy, Scott. They're going to DFA him
soon.
Oh,
wow. That would probably be good.
Yeah, maybe.
Then he'd pick up the team that actually wanted to play him every day.
Carlos Santana batted 7th in the Indians order, the lowest he's batted this year, although he'd recently been batting 6th a lot. Manuel Margot came off the DL. He led off for the Padres. Jose Perella batted 2nd. Anyone want Manuel Margot?
No, that's probably like Curtis Granderson range pickup, maybe even lower. I do want to mention Carlos Santana, following up our conversation from last week. He is now, which was points league based. It was a points league based discussion, by the way. He has now outscored Miguel Sano this year. Carlos Santana has.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. And Sano has been cold recently, but it's all about the walks and the strikeouts. But
walks are important, Adam.
They are, but again, a lot of people don't play in those leagues, and he was the 15th. He was the number 15 first baseman when we had that conversation. I think that's disappointing.
Number 15 first baseman is still probably a must start in a 12-team league.
Not if I could help it, I guess, but I couldn't. Cody Glover has not started throwing. Carlos Gomez sat with a back issue. Austin Jackson's out 3 to 4 weeks. Should we talk about Lonnie Chisenhall? He's having a nice year, just not playing that much.
He was actually in the top 10 sleeper hitters for this week because the Indians had an 8-game schedule, and at least 6 of those games, I think, were supposed to be against right-handed pitchers. He pretty much sits against every left-hander, but he's slugging like .650 and just a monster against right-handers. Definitely somebody somebody who's worth picking up and dropping as the matchups dictate.
Okay, Lonnie Chisenhall. Robert Gazelman's about to go on the DL with a hamstring injury. Andrew McCutchen's batting 3rd now, and he hit a game-tying double in the 9th inning. Blake Snell is going to start today against the Pirates. Start or sit Blake Snell?
Against the Pirates? I'll sit him. I want to see. I don't trust him yet.
It says probably. It's probably a better safe than sorry situation, but it wouldn't surprise me against the Pirates.
He was good in the minors.
He had, like, you know, 6 innings, 1 run, 11 Ks. Like,
ooh, wow.
Pick him up now just in case that happens.
And Danny Duffy will make his second rehab start Thursday, and Victor Martinez is going to come off the DL today. And let's get back to the fun stuff. And look, it's a good time of year, right? Whoever invented summer was obviously a sports fan. They didn't even try to hide it. They gave it playoff hockey, playoff basketball, the opening of both soccer and baseball. It's a clear display of favoritism, and the other seasons didn't stand a chance. So with 3 months of clutch playoff drama and the awakening of new seasons, it's clearly the work of a sports fan. And instead of summer, they may as well have called it sports season. In fact, at Buffalo Wild Wings, they do call it sports season. Don't ever call it summer. That's not what it is. It's sports season. They're just waiting on the legal change. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Let's talk about, oh gosh, I'm so conflicted. I want to get through these pitchers first, all right? Fringy starting pitchers. And then we're going to talk strategy a little bit and kind of look at our seasons. Let's cut this list in half. Start with Dan Straley. So these are the guys who are more owned. Dan Straley, another, you know, good start. Not great, but good start. Aaron Nola, 2 really good starts in a row. For the first time this season, 2 straight quality starts for Aaron Nola. Mike Fiers actually was pitching pretty well against Oakland. Gave up 1 run through 5 innings, then he loaded the bases, then he left, and then James Hoyt came in and gave up a grand slam to Ryan Healy. But 1 walk, 7 strikeouts for Fiers, so he continues a pretty good run.
All right, we're not giving Mike Fiers credit for the bullpen blowing a lead against Oakland, all right? It's,
well,
Mike Fiers. He deserves those runs.
5 innings, 1 run.
He had a sub 1 whip.
I'm not doing this Mike Fiers thing.
I mean, it was just...
I refuse.
It just sounded like he was a victim of circumstance in this.
His curveball's not spinning and he's never winning, guys. Come on.
I think he's a great choice right now.
Straley, just, Nola, Fiers. Hang on.
Wait. Fiers has figured something out and become somebody you can rely on all season, but we've seen a couple times in his career he'll pull off this stretch of like a dozen starts where he's amazing because he's just spotting his pitches so well.
Okay, so Straley, Nola, Fiers, and Alex Cobb. These guys are owned in more than 80% of leagues, so you're not really getting them. But do you believe in them? Straley, Nola, Fiers, and Cobb.
I believe in Straley the most. I think he should probably be owned everywhere now. Good strikeout rate for him, too, this year.
And continuing his... like, he's one of those guys that you can look at and say, well, the BABIP's low. The BABIP's always low. He's Marco Estrada.
Extreme fly ball pitcher in a big park in a way that doesn't give up...
getting strikeouts right now.
I need to give a split, though, for Dan Straley. He has a 2.31 ERA and 4 home runs at home. And he has a 4.93 ERA, 7 home runs on the road.
I definitely trust him more at home.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind. But Dan Straley, Aaron Nola, Mike Fiers, Alex Cobb. Scott, you said you trust Straley the most. Who else?
Yes, I would trust Maeda, but it doesn't sound like the Dodgers are ready to trust in him entirely yet. They didn't. Dave Roberts said he wasn't sure if he was going to make another start. Obviously, Brandon McCarthy's taking his turn on the DL, as they like to cycle every one of their pitchers through that 10-day thing. So it's not clear if his next outing is going to be another like 3 inning bullpen appearance or if he's...
No, he'll make another start. He'll make at least 1 more start. That's
how
what
you,
I read.
Where are you getting
I would
this?
Say
same place
ahead of me on
same,
all this rotation dude.
Same place. AP
I would
recap
say of this group, Straley and Nola should probably be close to 100% owned. Nola has much more upside than Straley. He's a pitcher that I really still can't figure out, but when he's on, he's clearly very good. And he's been on the last 2 starts. Fiers, no. Like Scott said, he goes through these stretches where he's really good and can be useful, but at the first sign of trouble, I'm getting rid of him. He gives up too many homers. And Alex Cobb, pitching really well lately, could be the biggest beneficiary on the Rays staff of the Adani Hechevarria trade. Hechevarria made a couple of nice plays yesterday. Actually drove in 2 runs yesterday, too, which is shocking.
How many swinging strikes did... Well, who had more... Did Adani Hechevarria have more RBIs than Alex Cobb swinging strikes yesterday? That's your trivia question.
Yeah, I don't know about Cobb's performance yesterday because he threw only 3 changeups.
He had 2 swinging strikes. But he carried a no-hitter into the 7th.
Yeah.
The changeup's his best pitch. He's been looking for it all year. Looked like he went back to it last start, and then he went away from it again in this start. So I don't know.
Maybe he just didn't need it. I mean, he pitched great.
I'm not entirely encouraged.
It's
though.
It's like a split change.
Right.
And so that's something that you see a lot with pitchers who rely on their splitters is that just it's a feel pitch. And sometimes you don't have the feel for it. Kevin Gausman talked about it earlier in the season, how it's not a pitch that he likes to throw a lot early because he doesn't have the feel for it and he can develop blisters. So
he actually has been throwing it more lately. And Gausman.
Okay, yeah.
Had one of his better starts yesterday. Still fell short of a quality start, but
wow,
somebody to keep an eye on.
Very, guys, very small baby steps.
You guys just reminded me. I totally forgot about that game. I didn't even look at the box score. Looking at it now. Oh, Joe Biagini. We can drop Joe Biagini, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So Scott, do you have an Uncle Charlie by any chance?
No,
okay.
I do not.
Because you threw us a big curveball earlier when you started talking about Kenta Maeda.
Yeah.
He wasn't part of the group. So let's go to the next group. Jeff Hoffman, Kenta Maeda, Tyson Ross, good start. Mike Clevinger, not a bad pitcher, that Mike Clevinger. And Yolish Chacin, 1.83 ERA at home. So Hoffman, did I say Guerra? Hoffman, Junior Guerra, Kenta Maeda, Tyson Ross, Mike Clevinger, Yolish Chacin.
Okay, so Ross's velocity is still down like 2 to 3 miles per hour. Very skeptical of that. Guerra's velocity is way down from last year, and he has like a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. I don't know why we're still bothering with him.
Yeah, he's been bad.
Clevinger's, you know, kind of interesting in a low end sort of way, but he's in a different class, I think, from like the Maedas and the Jeff Hoffmans, and that's.
I think
that
Tyson Ross.
Really worth saying.
Tyson Ross was really interesting yesterday because he just kind of just decided to just go full out old man game. He threw 57 sliders, and it's the only pitch he got a swinging strike on yesterday. And I think that's a sign that he doesn't have the stuff yet. He doesn't trust the fastball. He doesn't trust any of his secondary pitches. And, you know, I think it's something you can get away with doing. He does have a very good slider. That's something that runs in the Ross family. But it doesn't give me a lot of hope for sustainability. Jeff Hoffman's clearly the most interesting pitcher in this group.
You start Jeff Hoffman on the road. If you don't start him at home. He's been mostly the road so far, and he got crushed at home last time. But this was a two-start week for Hoffman, and they were both on the road. So we'll see what happens.
He's a little John Gray-ish.
We'll see what happens. He's got at Arizona this weekend. If you're in a daily league, you're going to trust Hoffman at Arizona. They're the team that crushed him in Coors Field last week.
I'd probably stay away, but it's not the worst idea.
Okay. So, what's worked, what hasn't worked for you guys this year? I specifically want to talk about your pitching strategies. And Chris, I want you to lead the way, because you were very different than me and Scott with pitching. And like I have two teams that I could talk about in this conversation, and one of them is the 24-0 team, which will not be 24-0 after this week. We'll be probably 24-2. But best pitching that I have, and invested in pitching, and it worked. And then there's my Roto League. I think I'm in sixth place, something like that. Pretty close to like fourth place, but not having a great year. And I invested a lot in pitching in that league. And I invested in John Lester, who's been okay. I invested in Garrett Cole, who's been okay. I invested in Cole Hamels. And that kind of speaks to Chris's argument, like pitchers are fickle and tricky, and
if you get the right ones, it's great.
I know, but like, I thought I had the right ones, you know.
So here's the weird thing for me. My best league is the one where I invested in Justin Verlander, Noah Syndergaard, and Danny Duffy. So I had three of my top 23 or 24 pitchers coming into the season. And I've pretty much gotten very little from those three. But my pitching is really good in that league because I've been able to pick up Drew Pomeranz, Sean Manaea, Jeff Samardzija, Luis Severino. These are guys that I picked up. Those are all guys that I've got Jacob Faria on the bench. So those are guys that I've been able to pick up on the waiver wire. And so, you know, the discussion a lot has turned to, well, you can find hitting on the waiver wire. Justin Smoke, Logan Morrison. And you can, Definitely. But I feel like we tend to write off the pitchers on the waiver wire who can be very helpful as well.
Sure, but you have a lot of teams. So I'm assuming you use this wait on pitching strategy in most leagues. Has it worked out for you?
It's hit or miss. The ones where I've been successful are the ones where I've been the most active on waiver wire. And I think that's
going to be true.
That's
a big part of playing fantasy
right,
sports.
And that's the thing is that we talk about, well, this is the strategy to use. Look at my team. I invested in this guy, and it's worked out.
Well, yeah. I mean, it depends on what starting point you're comfortable. The draft is always a starting point. Yeah. You're putting together a foundation, and a lot of your picks are going to miss. A lot of everybody's picks are going to miss. I actually looked at the top 40 hitters drafted this year. 18 of them have been busts or injured or something.
And about
like
the
it.
Same rate for the top 40 pitchers.
Yeah, I mean there are misses among pitchers and hitters. There have been, particularly recently, with guys like Chase Anderson and Zach Godley, Sean Newcomb, Faria, who you mentioned, there have been a few more quality fantasy options emerging on the waiver wire after we saw the early rush among hitters with guys like Aaron Judge and Conforto and Smoke, etc. Mm-hmm. I still think, and you know, even the leagues where I've drafted some pitchers who have burned me, Rick Porcello, I drafted him in a bunch of leagues, Verlander in a couple leagues, Syndergaard in a league. You know, I have some misses among the pitchers I spent on, but my hitting isn't struggling because there's just been such an abundance of it. And I feel like that's the state we're in baseball right now, where, yes, pitching is probably inherently a little riskier than hitting, but it's not enough to make up for the disparity in depth between the two, where outside of like 12 or 13 first round caliber hitters, there's a lot of interchangeability there.
Yeah, I'm still on board with the, if I were going to do it again, I would probably put even more of a priority on pitching. Scott, I think that's kind of what you were saying.
Yeah, I think I'd even go further. Things could change in the second half, of course. If maybe the baseball changes again, they go with a higher seam one and homers go way down. But
a big thing is just like, what if we just had a handful of guys who were just mirages? Like,
well,
what if Justin
that's
Smoke...
what we were saying at the end of last year, right? And it's only gotten quote unquote worse.
Right, but I'm talking like specifically like the guys who seem to have produced like superstars. The Justin Smoke, Logan Morrison, Yonder Alonso, Justin Bour kind of guys.
I think in this offensive environment, there are always going to be a couple dozen hitters who just completely catch us by surprise like that. Mm-hmm. Now,
I don't think they've been superstars. I hate to like nitpick.
I mean, they're all on pace for 40 plus home runs and 100 plus RBI,
if,
right?
If you look at where they rank in fantasy standings, they're not superstars.
But Smokes must start, clearly. Judge has been
A
monster.
Yeah,
Judge looks like the MVP of the league, and he was less than 50% owned coming into the year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
For me, it's. Maybe I would invest a little more in starting pitcher. I don't know. Like I still look at it and I can't get away from the inherent unreliability of starting pitchers and investing in those guys. And we can say that there's hitters who miss as well, but
yeah, there is.
The hitters who miss to me seem a little more obvious.
Well, okay.
Well,
Chris, let me just say, so while I do get your point about starting pitching being unreliable, what I think we don't talk about enough is that the reliable starting pitchers are so much better than the streaming starting pitchers, I think anyway. And, okay,
the ones that are healthy and producing right now, 100%.
Yeah, this is a really bad year for pitching. I don't know that we'll see this again.
Well, we were saying that last year, Adam.
I guess.
That was a conversation around pitching
last year. But look at how, but even still, like the injuries and the Bumgarner injuries, like the top 10 has been really bad.
That kind
of stuff always happens.
I don't know to disagree.
That's the thing with starting pitchers. It's not just their performance is unreliable, although their performance is harder to predict than hitter performance.
Yeah, it's, but
they just get hurt.
There's a bigger gap between hurt, but hitters and pitchers.
I mean, you can, all the athletes get hurt. You know,
sure,
they're,
but
they're
like you can play through
pushing their body to the limits.
You can play through more minor injuries as a position player than you can as a hitter.
This may be technically true, but it's small degrees where we actually like numbers of high end pitchers going down versus numbers of high end hitters going down. There's a lot of both. And I feel like it's, again, going back to my point about building a foundation that you feel like puts you in the best position to then make upgrades off the waiver wire as the season plays out. I think as things stand right now, unless something dramatically changes in the second half, my plan is to draft one of the clear standouts among hitters in the first round, the Mike Trout, Anthony Rizzo, you know, Nolan Arenado types, and then probably go starting pitcher 2, 3, 4, understanding that each of those picks, 2, 3, and 4, probably aren't going to work out. But, you know, if two of them do,
yeah,
I think I'm in a really good position.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Well, in a roto league, I don't think I'd do that, Scott, because I think at this point I would like to prioritize steals a little bit more. I think maybe I would just tweak it and say I'd like to get a steals guy in the first two rounds and then maybe go pitcher in like 3, 4, 5 or 4, 5, 6, 7 or something like that. I don't know that I'd go quite as all in on pitching as you would. I didn't do enough with steals. It's killing
you. You know
me.
Who's not really a bust this season?
Who?
Trey Turner.
Not at all. Not anymore. He's got 32 steals.
Been disappointing.
Now.
He's only hitting like 280, but he's on a 75 steal pace now.
I think that's another lesson to be learned is like, we did this research with Jonathan VR. You know, he had, what did he have, 50 something steals last year?
Yeah.
And based on the research I had done, a guy who stole that many bases was pretty likely, unless he got injured, to steal 40 bases the following year. And I think he would if he played, you know, I think he'd be on that pace over 162 games or like, you know, he's not going to get there because he's not going to play that many more games, I don't think, but, and he just got hurt. But, you know, when a guy like Machado, you see the steals go up and down, whatever, we don't know. Guys who steal 20 bases, Xander Bogaerts, like they could go up and down. You don't know, but the guys like Trey Turner, the elite base stealers, they're gonna get their steals. Yep. So that's kind of a different subject, but we're talking about things we've learned this year. That was a pretty important takeaway for me. And in a roto league, Scott, I think I'd have to try to get some steals in the first couple rounds before I went after pitching, unless it was Kershaw.
Well, what makes it difficult in a roto league is you start so many more hitters. I was thinking more of a head-to-head context, both points and categories, though.
Sure, I think it also it's very different. Scott, you think in head-to-head more, I think? Like, that's your default?
Yes.
And my default's very much roto. And so I think that's part of the... is I feel much more confident in my strategy in roto.
Yeah.
But your strategy might be the better one in head-to-head for sure.
I mean, it still might be three of my first six pitchers. Picks or pitchers in roto, even knowing how many hitter spots I have to fill. And you know, when I'm referring to the hitter spots, traditional roto, you start five outfielders, you start an extra middle infielder, extra corner infielder. So there's
14 position players to 9 pitchers.
You just go deeper into the hitter pool than you do in either of the head-to-head formats.
So I want to conclude with this. I want to read you my pitching staff and... I mean, you can tell me why I'm doing so freaking badly, but my pitching staff in this roto league.
What format?
12-team roto. This is our two-catcher auction league, a lot of hitters, 9 pitcher spots. The only pitching category I'm doing well in is saves. I have Cody Glover currently on the DL. I have Edwin Diaz and Roberto Ozuna. But John Lester, Cole Hamels, Garrett Cole. I now have Alex Cobb. Jacob Faria. Oh, okay. I should probably mention Marcus Stroman and Marco Estrada were the 5 pitchers that I spent the most on. So Hamels, Cole, Lester, Stroman, and Estrada. I have Alex Cobb. I have Jacob Faria. I have Sean Newcomb. I have Joe Ross on the bench. So I think I've done a good job. My pitching has been bad in that league, but I wouldn't be surprised if I go on a second half run. If Lester can like really start dominating, if Hamels can just be good, that's the one I'm most concerned about. If Cole can be a top 20-ish pitcher, like I think I might go on a second half run here, and I'd be interested to see if this strategy works because I didn't invest that much in hitting, and I have arguably the best hitting in the league.
Yeah.
So
you accidentally put it together.
Yeah.
Not accidentally, but you put it together on the fly.
What, hitting?
Yeah.
Well, my two highest players in this league, this is an auction league, were Blackman and Bryant. And then I spent, you know, I didn't spend on Kershaw, I didn't spend on Scherzer or anyone like that, but I thought Lester, Hamels, and Cole would give me a great rotation, and I still think it's possible. So let's see how the second half plays out, but I wouldn't be surprised if I structured this a team like that again. And I'm just having a disappointing year. Stupid league. But anyway.
I mean, and the one thing that it's really important to avoid in this kind of ex post facto analysis is like, well, Noah Syndergaard got hurt, so clearly drafting a pitcher, like you can retrofit the data to make your point fit, and that's not good analysis. Like, you have to have a process, and basing it on 1 year, I think it's a waste. And you can cherry pick anything you want and say, well, my team's working, so my process is working. And it's not necessarily the right
way. Well, I'm saying my team isn't working right now, but I still believe in my process.
It's 2 years, right?
It's 2 years with the offensive explosion, but I'm talking about like the specific, like,
Noah Syndergaard getting hurt.
These pitchers got hurt, so the pitchers are unreliable. Like, for me, it's not so much that Noah Syndergaard and Madison Bumgarner got hurt. It's that pitchers have, over time, roughly a 40% chance of going on the DL, starting pitchers in any given season. And that number's only going up.
Like last year,
that's a big part for me.
Last year was an offensive explosion, right? But let me read you the top 10 pitchers last year. Max Scherzer, Rick Porcello, that was obviously a surprise, Justin Verlander, Madison Bumgarner, John Lester, Johnny Cueto, Chris Sale, Corey Kluber, David Price. Then you get to Kyle Hendricks. I don't know, that was probably more than 10. But, I mean, those are the names. Those are the familiar names. Then you go back in time, you'll see a lot of that.
How many of them have been top 10 pitchers this year? Two? Three? Scherzer, Kershaw, and Sale?
But we could do the same exercise.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is that when we look at, well, last year's top 10 pitchers are guys that you know, and now those guys aren't. And so
I do think there is a clear distinction between the haves and have-nots at starting pitcher now, where, you know, it being a three true outcomes game where so many hitters are capable of hitting the ball out of the park, and strikeouts are so plentiful. I mean, they either hit home runs, strikeouts, or walk. The pitchers who miss a lot of bats and also pitch deep into games are not as plentiful. I mean, the pitchers who miss a lot of bats and pitch deep into games are so valuable relative to the ones who don't do either one of those things. Yeah. Don't do at least one of those two things. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. It's hard to get out. Sorry.
No problem. We got a lot to get to that we won't get to today, so we'll save it for tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get to fun with Fangraphs. It's actually a pretty interesting segment. Grade the trade. Man, I apologize to the listeners. I hope that was an interesting discussion because I didn't get to grade the trade or the emails. So you know what? Let's do it. Grade the trade from John. Kemp and Corey Knebel for Will Myers. Actually giving up Will Myers, getting Kemp and Knebel in a 16-team dynasty league.
Closers are tough in 16 teams. I will give that a B minus.
Okay. From Brian.
Yeah, we haven't. What?
Let me keep going, Chris. Sorry. From Brian, Carrasco and Braun for Kluber. Give up Carrasco and Braun for Kluber.
C minus.
Yeah.
C minus. I don't think it's crazy in some circumstances, but it's a little worse than the Kluber side.
Jimmy from Canada, Dynasty League, head-to-head categories. Give up Benintendi in a Dynasty League. Get Price and Seager.
I'd have to know how
he says he has Sano and Moustakas a third, so I don't know how valuable Kyle Seager is in that instance.
I mean, at face value, it seems like a great deal. It seems like a, you know, A minus kind of deal, but I don't know if Benintendi's being kept for much cheaper than the other two.
I'll go with a B.
Okay. Mitch Connor. Grade the trade, 14-team categories, two keepers for 3 years. Give up Nelson Cruz and Gene Segura. This is interesting. Give up Cruz and Segura. get Bellinger and Ian Desmond in a category league. Cruz and Segura for Bellinger and Desmond.
The only way this one makes sense is if Bellinger is so much cheaper than Nelson Cruz, and I would assume he is. But you're kind of hoping Cody Bellinger is Nelson Cruz for the next 2 years, right?
Yeah.
2 years.
I think we all think Gene Segura is a lot better than Ian Desmond.
Yeah. So
just
you don't like
because
it?
Of the position he plays. Yeah.
So I, with what we know right now, I think it's probably a D, but if there's a giant gap between Nelson Cruz and Cody Bellinger's keeper value, then it obviously swings the other way.
All right, this is Christian from St. Louis. Give up Paxton and Maben. Paxton and Maben. Get Chris Davis with a K.
Oh, I suspect this offer was made prior to last night's start for Paxton, which was a very encouraging one. It wouldn't have made sense even then, though, that this might be an F.
I think he needed power. The guy deleted that from the email, but... So he's getting Karis Davis for Paxton.
Even
Maben.
Then.
Power should be easy to come by.
Power is the easiest thing to come by. You're giving up the two hardest things to come by, starting pitching and stolen bases.
All right, 12-team categories league. Ian Desmond is a bench player, so this is from Matthew from California. Give up Chris Bryant and Ian Desmond. Get Corey Kluber. Bryant and Desmond for Kluber.
I don't know why you'd have to give up Desmond with Bryant. That seems... Like, Bryant for Kluber straight up is probably close to a C. I could see in this, you know, environment giving that an even C. But you throw Desmond in, I didn't think you lose this. It's a D plus, like Chris said.
Dan in Toronto. Rebuilding keeper league. Give up Goldschmidt. Get Miguel Sano. And either Nick Senzel or Brendan Rodgers. And a first-round pick at next year's draft. Give up Goldschmidt.
I don't know how to rate prospects without knowing the full all the rules of the league. I mean, trading Goldschmidt, I feel like you need more than prospects in return in most dynasty leagues, but like I don't know the economics of this league, so it's hard to say. It looks bad at face value.
All right, then. Brandon gives up Nelson Cruz, gets David Price. Wants to know if Price will be an ace again. Brandon, greatest trade, Cruz for Price.
I think that's a D. David Price is too risky. Nelson Cruz is too much of a sure thing.
I'll give it a C. I need the pitching more in most cases.
All righty. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, listeners. And my apologies for not getting to more stuff. Last thing I want to say is that Carlos Martinez is awesome. He was supposed to be pitching the contact more this season. That was the preseason report. And he is striking out everybody, and I think he's a top 8 pitcher. So how about that? We'll talk to you tomorrow here on Fantasy Baseball Today.